I'm in the office in the editing studio. It's a fun thing for me because I don't really, I've never done, you know, any music thing or anything like that. I think because of that, I had this crazy dream, you're going to laugh. I had come up with like some beats and some rhythms. And then you were like, that's dope. I love that. Like, that's amazing. That's like a whole new sound. Maybe we should put that on the record. I even had like a persona like J-Lo or like B-Lo. That's the bad version, obviously. Do you have any time today if I wanted to squeeze by and like...
I understand. Because I don't know what your plan was with that gun, but there's about 4 feet of new wet snow on top of that ice crust. So if you fire that thing, I guarantee you it's going to trigger an avalanche.
Well, Patty, if there's one thing I've learned...
Wait, Archer?
It's that there's no guarantees in this crazy world.
You don't know who Ben Affleck is?
Are you kidding, though, right? That's it.
No. Is that you?
I am Ben. I know. That's a bit of a younger picture.
Jennifer Lopez's husband. That's cool.
I'm a kind of influencer myself of sorts.
What do you do?
I do some acting and writing and directing of movies, which are a long-form entertainment that were popular in the 20th century.
I can't claim that I knew Ted well, but I do know that he had his passions. Star Wars was one. And apparently he was also a devoted member of the Ku Klux Klan. A fact I only learned moments ago. Sure wish someone had mentioned it. There you have it. Oh, it says here that he also loved tennis.
Who is TikTok?
I think Judy's point of view is very valid, Rach. Provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister.
Here's why I know it's right. It's because there's a voice. Don't do this terrible mistake.
That might be what you need to hear.
No, that's the wrong voice.
No, it's not. What if it's a voice of reason?
Nah, I don't have that voice, believe me.
I guess I should clear my mind here a little bit and not say what I'm really thinking, but let me be clear.
How do you like them? Donuts, I'm so sorry.
You had to see it, but I forgive you. Lay us on the track. What track are we?
We talked about this.
Let's go.
You know what? You're biased. You're blinded by them pinstripes. Wrap it up.
There goes Babe Ruth.
Tom, you can stay.
You remember when I told you I'd do anything for you? This is anything.
Good morning, America. How are you? I'm Rabbi Dave.
And I am Friar Rod, and it is a ground soft morning, Dave.
What does that mean? It
means it's been raining.
Oh. I guess I should know that. I used to live there.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just... I don't know. My head is in a different place right now, so... There you go. It's been a crazy week for me, but we'll get to some of that...
Okay.
...towards the end of the show, so...
It's been a normal week for me, so.
Well, you know, you think you got a handle on things, and then one thing changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I hate more than anything in life is having to rely on other people to make something happen. I hate that. I'm one of these people that if something's got to happen and I got to get it done, I get it done. For example... By way of example, this has nothing to do with what I want to talk about. On Friday, I had a writing assignment due for the world history class.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a ridiculous writing assignment. It was literally read 35 pages of a doctoral thesis and then answer 6-9 questions about it.
Okay.
In the late imperial dynasties of China, what were the criteria for being a well-educated man, and why?
Okay, was that covered in the reading, I hope?
Well, it probably was, but I don't know. So in other words... You know, I had to do it, so I did it myself. The rest of the class was all on Discord, sharing ideas and all this other stuff. And I just,
okay. That's a great place to go.
So Discord. I did it in like 2 hours because it was 9 questions.
Mm-hmm.
The last of which was, which of these three systems, the one in late Imperial China, Timbuktu during the height of the Islamic age, or Paris in the 1200s, which educational system would you have chosen to be a part of?
Okay. Whichever one had the better plumbing.
I said none of them. First off, I'm Jewish. They're not going to let me into 2 of them. But the third one, the Chinese one, is antithetical to everything I believe in the sense of liberty and self-determination. But if I had a choice, if I had to choose some ancient system, I would have chosen the Roman one, because at least they believed in liberty and republicanism.
So this was your answer?
Yes. It's what I wrote.
Okay. Has it been graded yet?
Yes. I got my grade this morning on this ridiculous assignment.
Okay. Enlighten us.
You want me to read what he said?
Yeah, I do.
This has been the fun part about it. Quote.
Well, this is the good professor, right?
No, this is the world history professor.
Oh, okay.
The French Muslim.
Oh, okay.
Whatever. So here's the response. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent! !
Okay.
With a grade of 100.
Well, there you go.
I feel so bad about all the people in the Discord room because they're all, oh my God, I got to turn in late. I'm going to do this. I don't care. I did the extra credit so that I don't really even need this assignment. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
That would be my son.
Right. So I like to do things myself instead of relying on other people because I tend to do a better job that way. And I have found myself this week put into a position where I'm now relying on other people to do something. And at least one of them doesn't want to do it. Well, he wants to do it, but he wants to do it his way.
Mm.
But we'll get to that a little bit later. As you know, the humor of this show, the underlying current of this show,
mm-hmm.
is based on the idea that both Rod and I are very religious people.
Yes.
Now, we do not, I can't speak for Rod. But I can speak for myself. I don't consider myself to be a religious zealot by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
I consider myself to be a Hasidic Jew, but I'm not the guy walking around in the black suit with the hat. We've had that conversation about why I don't do that, but the general idea is that those things to me are indicative of someone whose entirety of existence is about their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And the entirety of my existence is not about my religion. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
It's more about my relationship with God. And I believe that God and I have an agreement, which is that I believe in him, he believes in me, and we all get along. But I don't know what Rod, I don't know how Rod would characterize his, but I'll give him the opportunity here to do so.
Okay, yeah. I at one point in time, I was more zealous than I am today, but I consider myself an evangelical Christian, but I have a strong, I guess, respect for the older liturgical, denominations, even some of the Catholic practices or some fascinating things and stories behind that. But
see, I am a liturgical guy.
Yeah.
One of my biggest frustrations when I was a Christian pastor, and I was the lack of liturgicalism in the denomination. The denomination that I belonged to was moving away from liturgical ideas
mm-hmm.
and into this, what I call free form nonsense worship,
okay.
which I hate. I can't express this to you enough. And one of the things that I appreciate about Judaism is that it is very liturgical.
Mm-hmm.
While there are some variances in each service, for example, you can pick a different psalm each week, but you're still going to do the psalm.
Mm-hmm.
But there is the heart of the service is always the same. The Amida, Torah, those are always precise. Okay. And then the Midrash and everything else after. my experience in the church I grew up in was very frustrating when it came to this. I got to be careful how I say this, right? Because I'm not trying to cause offense. I'm not saying anything here I haven't said to other members of my denomination in pastoral conferences. It was so frustrating to me. And that was one of my bosses at one point asked me, how much time do you spend on a sermon each week? And I said somewhere between 20 minutes and an hour, depends on the sermon. Mm-hmm. The meeting itself takes a little bit longer because you gotta pick the right songs, you gotta have this, you gotta have prayers, the right passage. And he looked at me and said, I don't spend less than 15 to 20 hours on every sermon for preparation. But yeah, but you only preach one sermon every 6 months and then you give the same sermon everywhere you go.
Oh, I'm sure that went over like
did
a
not go over well, but
blood brick.
But the bottom line was he expected a lot more preparation than he thought he was getting. Now, we've had this discussion before about what is sermon prep? What is show prep? Everything is show prep. Everything is sermon prep.
Yeah.
So we're going through this, and what I got frustrated with, Rod, was if I'm going to spend somewhere between 2 and 6 hours over the course of a busy week, while you're doing all the other things that you have to do as a pastor, as a CEO, as a Boys and Girls Club manager, as a store manager, all these other things that you have to do.
Because modern church is a business.
Right. And if I'm going to spend that kind of time doing that, the thing I hate is when I get up on Sunday morning and some bozo in the back row stands up and says, the word of the Lord has come to me today and I am here to share it with you, and begins to ramble.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, my own grandfather or my ex-wife.
So did you ask them how much prep they spent before they...
I have been known to do that. My ex-wife, whom I just to be clear, I have a very good relationship with my ex-wife. In fact, last summer we went out of our way to go see her in Virginia or North Carolina, wherever the hell it is. Anyway, I used to get on her about that. Look, if you're going to speak, don't put me on the program.
Yeah.
Because why am I doing all this work if the Holy Spirit's going to come in here and just take over everything? What's the line? What's the line in, is it Ezekiel? Jeremiah? I don't remember. Which way did the Spirit of the Lord go when he departed from me for you? Which, again, is out of context, but it's almost like that.
It's paraphrased by Dave.
Yeah. Why am I doing this if, oh, it's in Kings. That's where it is. Why am I doing all this if the Holy Spirit's just going to drop in unannounced and take over? And that, to me, I just hate it. Hated it. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
And so for me, liturgy protects the integrity of the service.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Okay.
I was raised, as you know, in the Methodist Church. And so very, very similar, Wesleyan, to yours, your background. And while I like the liturgy, for some reason, the worship and the singing of the songs was lacking something. It was lacking, I don't know how to put this. It just wasn't alive to me. So when I actually started, I had friends in the evangelical church that I started attending. Not attending, but started visiting different churches and kind of expanding my view of things. I did love a little bit more of the free-form worship, not so much the structure of the overall service, but the singing, the song singing, and was a little bit more freer and more, a little bit more emotion-based, I think. If you're going to have emotion in any kind of church service, it's the singing of the songs and telling God how holy he is where it should be.
And while I don't disagree with that, I do get frustrated with what passes for modern music in the church. Because
yeah,
I do
I'll
get
agree.
Frustrated with what passes for modern music in the church. Because I do get frustrated with what passes for modern music in the music in the modern church. Because it so frustrates me about this, what passes for modern music in the church. Key change. It really frustrates me what passes for music in the modern church.
Yeah. They, you know, the key changes left, I think, in about the last 5 to 7 years ago. They stopped all the whole prescriptive key changes, but it's still pretty much, you know, it's your first verse, chorus, second verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, 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 and then the worship.
Ad nauseam, right.
Yeah. So, they camp on that. They camp
so that's,
on things.
That's just a general idea of where we come from. Okay. This really isn't what this is about today, but I needed to reinforce to you, the listener, where we are coming from. When we started this show, we kicked it off. You can go back and listen to it because there are records of all the shows that we have done available at whatthefrock.org.
When we flipped from DNR.
Right.
Do Not Resuscitate.
Which are also available on, I believe, Spotify and Apple iTunes. Yeah. You can find all that stuff. We had this long discussion about a group known as the Goliards, which we found to be spiritually kind of aligned with us. The Goliards were boisterous, bawdy, misbehaving Sunday school children who like to sing really loud.
Yeah. Well, and Dave, you're familiar with spiritual gifts, right? Yeah, they talk about spiritual gifts and things like that. It's more so in the evangelical churches, I think.
Right.
Or so. I've always considered, you know, one of my primary spiritual gifts is sarcasm. And so it aligns perfectly with this whole Goliard mentality.
Now, the thing about the Goliards was that they were in the church. Mm-hmm. They didn't not believe church doctrine. They didn't like the way the church was behaving about its doctrines. And so they would mock priests and the like for taking indulgences, misbehaving in relationships that they weren't supposed to be having anyway. But the important thing to keep in mind here is that the Goliards, while rambunctious and bawdy, did not believe the doctrines of the church.
Yeah.
And in a quiet moment, I'm sure that they would go and repent of their behavior. And then go right back to it.
Sure.
That's what you did.
They'd go to confessional.
Right. Do a few Hail Marys and then write a song about it. I bring all that up because we've seen this week two things that really kind of scratched at me a little bit, I guess is the way to put it. We saw on Wednesday, which was Ash Wednesday, which I do not participate in, obviously, because we don't believe in that. Right.
What do you get, a little starved, David?
Yeah, it's one of those days where we just kind of keep a low profile because who knows what's going to happen. Anyway, at one public university in Kansas, where was this? It was at Fort Hays State University in Kansas. A student group sponsored the distribution of ashes mixed with glitter on Ash Wednesday. And they did this as, quote, an inherently queer sign of Christian belief, unquote.
So were they serious about the Christian belief part, but co-opting it to be a different political message?
They called it an inclusive, faith-based student organization, which is focused on providing service, and said that they were reacting against a, quote, tradition of exclusion in Christianity of people who are attracted to members of the same sex, people who identify with a biological gender, so forth and so on. They brought in an Episcopalian pastor and a Lutheran pastor who attended in support, but a local representative of the Methodist Church said, no, I'm not doing that.
Well, I don't recall in the Methodist Church that we really did a whole lot of like ash stuff on your forehead. That was more Catholic, Lutheran, maybe Anglican or Episcopalian.
Where I grew up, none of that stuff was. We did not accept the sacraments as practice for reasons that go beyond the scope of this, but it had to do with alcohol. So,
okay.
At any rate,
well, that's true. You're
the world's largest temperance organization. So, at any rate, I remember the first time someone suggested that they actually have wine for the quote unquote Lord's Supper, and you would have thought, oh my God, you would have. It was a brouhaha, let's put it that way. And the argument that, well, Jesus drank it, didn't really fly.
Well, not only did he drink it, he made it. So, after people were already drunk.
Believe me, you don't want to bring that up. Anyway, some Catholic students at the school took exception to this. They saw it as a parody of Ash Wednesday, one of the holiest days of the Catholic liturgical calendar, and reacted obviously in a negative way. Certain other Christian denominations have a similar practice, so forth and so on. Some described it as disgraceful, outrageous, and beyond sickening. A member of a student group reacting to criticism posted saying that the Glitter Ash event is, quote, not intended to offend, but to reach out to those on the margins of society, those who have experienced hurt from the church, and invite them back into the loving embrace of God. It is not a mockery of faith. The Glitter Ash is meant to highlight the hope that Christ promised to, quote, all Christians, unquote.
Yeah, but he also said, go and sin no more, so,
Well, yeah, but if you don't consider that a sin, because...
Well, it's because it doesn't, you know, doesn't meet your worldview, right?
Okay, that's a start, yeah. Okay, which brings me to my foundational question today.
Okay.
And this is really where I want to go with it. Is this type of activity Galliardism, or is it sacrilegious?
I think in the vein of the Goliards, the Goliards were making fun of the church practices of the day, right? They were bringing
the practices that were not in keeping with their own doctrine.
Yes, yes. So this practice of the glitter ash is not in keeping with the current practices of those that revere and practice the ash on the forehead.
Okay. So does it come down to the idea then that the Galliards were people who were actually internal to the church?
They were a part of the church, yes.
Right. Who believed those doctrines, practiced those doctrines, simply, mm-hmm. well, maybe not even simply, but behaved in a way that was, as you put it, a spiritual gift of sarcasm, which might have at some point, I mean, if you were a bishop or a archbishop or a priest or whatever who was doing some of these things that the Goliards were making fun of, how would you feel?
Well, I mean, it was a challenge to their authority to a degree, right?
It is, but is it not also a Nathan coming before David and saying, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, maybe.
Would there be some element of that? I mean, if I'm taking indulgences, and all of a sudden one of the people in my congregation is singing bawdy songs about taking indulgences.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, but see, the difference here is that I don't think there's any... There's no ambiguous question about the practice of the ash on the forehead.
Okay.
How is that, without glitter, how is that exclusive to, or a turnoff to those that aren't a part or don't believe in the...
Well, they say it's because of exclusivity. They say it's because they have been excluded from the faith. They've been, what is it, often experienced hurt from the church and invite them back into the loving embrace of God, because this is the hope in Christ which is promised to, quote, all, in bold capitalized letters, Christians. In other words, saying that I read that as speaking for what the doctrine of this church is, whatever this church may be.
Well, we don't know that, but I think to pick on one specific practice and try and remarket or rebrand that, right, for lack of a better phrase, to be more inclusive and target a different audience group, when in and of itself, I'm sure there's liturgical ways that they get this ash, right, so that they normally go through, I would think, I'm not a Catholic, so I don't know how, but there's got to be a practice of how they did get the ash.
I'm sure there
ritually and use it. So there's a holiness about that whole process. So without that understanding and then taking just glitter to kind of emulate the practice. Okay.
Just by way of comparison.
I don't think they're trying to make fun of it. They're just trying to take their own political views and reach out to more people.
Just by way of comparison, in Judaism, if you have something that is kosher, something that is holy,
yeah,
and that holy thing, whatever it might be, comes in contact with, touches, whatever, something that is not holy.
Mm-hmm.
It does not make the unholy holy. It makes the holy unholy.
That's correct.
Makes sense.
Yes. And I think the Catholic faith would also believe the same thing.
Right. So does mixing the glitter in, because it has not been through that process, essentially negate whatever value there was to the ashes in the first place?
I would think so from a religious point of view. Yes.
Well, is it?
And so here's my frustration, okay, with this whole idea of what they're doing. So there are plenty of churches, Christian churches, denominations out there for any of these groups that feel marginalized to join. I mean, if they don't like it, they could create one, right? Isn't that what the people do? Create their own denomination or go non-denominational or something?
See, and that's something I've said for a long time. Why do you try to change what we are? Why don't you go be what you want to be? But there's something in humankind. You see this in illegal immigration. Why are you coming here to behave the same way that you behaved there?
Yeah.
Why do you come into the doors of this religious facility and try to turn it into something that that you want it to be as opposed to what it is or was? And we've seen that. I've seen that a lot.
Well, it's with religion. It's, you know, usually it's the faiths that are they're speaking against a certain behavior or practice, right? So they're trying to undermine and stop that from happening. That's usually typically what it is. So because, you know, this church doesn't believe what I believe, I'm going to have to go change that church because they're wrong.
So is that Goliardism or is that sacrilege?
I think the act of the glitter in particular is sacrilegious. I don't think it's Goliardish.
In New York this past week, on Thursday, the day after Ash Wednesday, a funeral was held at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City.
This was going to be my WTF, by the way.
Now, I was not aware of this, but St. Patrick's Cathedral is apparently referred to as the National Cathedral's in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But this one is called the Nation's Cathedral. Did not know that. This week, a funeral was held for one Cecilia Gentile, who, I'm just going to put it out here, was an illegal immigrant from Argentina, came here around 2004, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were an illegal immigrant, had no skills or foundational abilities, turned instead to sex work in New York and became well known over the course of the years as a, quote, transgender activist, unquote. The funeral for this person, and I don't even know what they died. I don't care. Doesn't matter. The funeral was held at St. Patrick's Cathedral. They called family, whoever, called up the cathedral and said, we'd like to have the funeral there. And the only question that the church asked was this person Catholic? The answer was given, yes. And so the cathedral allowed the funeral to happen.
Okay.
There's video of the priest who is visibly confused at the start of the funeral,
mm-hmm,
because what showed up could only be described as a trans activist convention,
mm-hmm,
to the funeral. The priest is obviously confused, and his comment about, well, we don't usually see this many people so well turned out except on Easter, which is kind of funny.
That's kind of Goliard-ish right there.
Goliard-ish. But at the same time, you could tell he's a little taken aback by this whole thing. There's a great scene in news radio where Dave Nelson ends up doing a funeral for a guy he doesn't know.
Okay.
And it turns out the guy is a member of the KKK.
Oh, no.
He didn't know that going in. He thought he was a Star Wars fan, which is why he volunteered to do it. Anyway, there's visible confusion here. And the funeral, as I understand it, devolves into the type of behavior that you would not expect at a funeral. It's very celebratory of trans behavior, very...
To the point of even rewriting certain hymns and...
Yes. Yes. And when the whole thing is over, there's a great deal of controversy. It's interesting to read the articles about this, because on Thursday evening and into Friday morning, all the articles are about how this was so wonderful and inclusive and beautiful. And by Friday evening, the articles are about how the church could have possibly allowed this to happen.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Followed by, we didn't know this was going to happen. We were told this person was Catholic. They wanted a mass. They
obviously weren't practicing.
And we had no idea who this person actually was. Which seems
there's going to be some policy changes, I'm sure, after this.
Which seems far-fetched, given that the people who did the funeral put out a press release about it, announcing it. I think somebody in the Catholic Church would read press releases. I don't know. But anyway, now the church has claimed that they were tricked into allowing it.
Well, it could have been.
Is this Goliardism or is it sacrilegious?
I don't think that the people that coordinated and attended this were actually members of the Catholic Church or practicing members of the Catholic Church.
I don't think you have to be to go to a funeral.
You don't have to, but to have a funeral there, I think you have to be a Catholic.
That's why they ask. Right. That's why they asked the question. Was this
because you can't get buried in a Catholic cemetery unless you're Catholic.
Which is reasonably possible, given that this person was originally from Argentina.
How do you prove that, right?
You can't disprove it.
No.
And don't you have to kind of take, this was one of the controversies in the post-World War II era, was escaping Nazis who told priests that they were Catholic. Could they prove it? Probably not, but, you know, you have to take their word for it. This has caused an interesting event to occur yesterday. Known as the Mass of Reparation. You ever hear of this?
I had not heard of that before, but it makes total sense considering once I read it, I'm like, okay, I can understand how that would be.
The Mass of Reparation is a mass. It's a service being held at the church for the sole purpose of, I guess, in a way, purifying the church.
And rededicating it.
And begging Jesus' forgiveness for being tricked into allowing this to happen. There's a part of me that gets, hey, I'm Jewish, we rededicated the temple, we have a whole holiday for it. We have 8 days of latkes and vodkas and all chocolates and gelt and all kinds of cool stuff for the very same reason, except that we didn't desecrate our own temple.
No.
Antiochus did it for us. But you could argue that the Catholic Church allowed these people in. I mean,
like I said, policies are going to change.
Well, this goes back to what I was saying in the beginning about liturgy. Sure. And when someone just stands up and announces, I have the word of the Lord today, what are you supposed to do at that point? How does it make me look if I say to that person, sit down and shut up? Which way did the Spirit of the Lord go from me when he came to speak to you?
Well, I guess it depends on the denomination and the practice that allows that. Because the evangelical churches, and more so the Assemblies of God, charismatic ones, have a lot of that, the Spirit of the Lord stuff. Not so much in the Methodist Church. In fact, the first time I was exposed to anything like that, I was like, what the heck are these people doing? They're standing up and talking in weird languages, and now they're doing... It was totally foreign.
We didn't even get the weird languages. I mean, that was just the way it was. But as the pastor, what are you supposed to do at that point? Because if I say, sit down and shut up, somebody's going to be mad because you told that person to shut up and they had the word of the Lord.
So what we did in the non-denominational evangelical church, we did not give those people microphones.
Good plan. But what do you do if you're this priest standing there and you've just said, well, we don't normally see people turned out like this except on Easter. And all of a sudden this devolves from this Catholic mass funeral into this
raunchy
body show, which has nothing to do with the church. Could he have stopped it? Should he have stopped it? Should he even have tried?
Well, I guess it's better to ask forgiveness than permission, right?
Well, apparently that's what you do with reparation mass. You go in and tell Jesus, look, I got tricked and I was afraid. And
well, I mean, you don't want to cause a riot for one, because he's, you know, I'm sure he didn't have security all there to deal with, like, kicking all these people out.
Right. But you're right. There'll be some policy.
There will be some big policy changes.
But how do you do that? I mean, are you Catholic? Yes. Okay, we want to see your order of service before we allow them.
Well, there will be a contract that's drafted up. So you will be responsible for you're asking for our services. These are what you have to abide by.
I found it a set of just fascinating stories. I really did because of how I view religion and because of my own path and those sorts of things. And my own experiences, I don't know. I will tell you that the thing that I did when that happened multiple times in one service is I left. I just walked out. And I'm wondering if the priest shouldn't have just done that.
Well, he probably wanted to keep close eye on the tabernacle and stuff that was up on the altar and.
You afraid they're going to take it or break it or
potentially, right? I mean, they're all holy objects.
Sacrilegiously use it somehow or another. But as it turns out, even if that happens, you have this massive reparation. So,
well, and like I said, Dave, that's not the first time. The article I read about this whole massive reparations, they had to do it in that same location not that long ago because someone did a music video that ended up being raunchy and she was like dancing on the altar or something like that.
This seems to be a fairly regular thing. Although, there are specific Roman Catholic organizations which exist for the sole purpose of conducting these. Did you know that?
I did.
Ready? You ready for this?
Okay.
The Arch Confraternity of Reparation for Blasphemy and the Neglect of Sunday, founded by Pierre-Louis Baris in 1847.
Okay.
The Arch Confraternity of the Holy Face, founded in 1851 by Leo Deport, the Holy Man of Tours. And the Pontifical Congregation of the Benedictine Sisters of the Reparation of the Holy Faith.
Face. So why does my mind immediately go to the life of Brian?
Mine did exactly the same thing. Anyway, what do you think? Get us an email, WTF@whatthefrock.org, or comment on our Facebook page or our website, either one, whatthefrock.org. Let us know what you think. Was all this Goliardism, or was it sacrilegious? And if so, what could be done, or what even should be done? Those are questions. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Dave.
I'm Rod.
And we do not have Dunkin' Donuts.
You don't have Dunkin' Donuts.
One of my wife's things that she just... That's one of the reasons she likes going to South Carolina, because you can't swing a dead cat on a 3-foot string without hitting a Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay.
And in fact, my wife has the Dunkin' Donuts app on her phone because my daughter uses it all the time. My wife keeps adding money to it, and it's a way to connect with the dog. But anyway.
I guess.
I don't know how I feel about Dunkin' Donuts. Sometimes they're really, their coffee is excellent. I'll give you that. Their coffee is fantastic. But the donuts are, marginal. I mean, they're donuts. It's like pizza. There's no such thing as bad pizza, right?
Yeah.
It's all.
They are not Mr. T's in Modesto.
No, they are definitely not Mr. T's. So there's that. And up here, they're not Lone Star. So, but at the same time, how do you like them donuts? I'm sorry. I had to say it.
So, I didn't even watch the ad.
Really? You have not watched the ad?
I've not seen it.
So the Super Bowl features this ad from Ben Affleck for Dunkin' Donuts.
I've seen pictures of him in that jumpsuit. But...
Okay. So last year, there was an ad for Dunkin' Donuts where Ben was working at Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay.
And people were coming by and he would, you know, screw up their orders and stuff. And the last person that comes by is J-Lo, to whom he is married. I did not know that.
Yeah, he is.
So, Gen Ben is a thing, whatever they call that. So, anyway, she comes by and bothers him at work, I guess, is the way he puts it. So this year's ad, she's working on an album, and he wants to be on the album, right?
Okay.
And he convinces himself that this is a great idea. And his friends are all trying to talk him out of it. That's a terrible idea. Don't do that. But he gets together his little group, his little rap group, which he calls the Boston Massacre, which might be the most interesting relationship dynamic here, is because she's from Bronx and he's from Boston.
Okay.
So you have this whole Yankees Red Sox thing going, and he just shows up at the engineering session where she's working on the album, because he's gonna you know, put this
crash
out there and see if Well, see if I can be on the album. We put together this beat, is what he keeps calling it.
Yeah.
He's got Tom Brady, Touchdown Tommy, on the keyboards.
Okay.
And he convinces his best friend, Matt Damon, who I just like. I really like Matt Damon. I always have. He convinces
He's a good actor. He really is.
He convinces him to go with him. Because he's his best friend. And then he has these other three rappers I have no idea who are. And he calls his group the Boston Massacre. And they just stomp into this recording session to lay down their track and then say, are you going to put us on the album? And of course, it's a disaster. If you haven't seen the ad, it's a start.
I'm going to have to watch it.
And of course, it features the line from Matt Damon that I just like. But I just love that line, which is, of course, how about them donuts? I'm sorry, I had to say it. But the ad ends with a line that where he says to Affleck, remember when I said I'd do anything for you? This is anything. Which was completely ad-libbed. Nobody knew he was going to say that. But they kept it in there because it was so good. The beauty of this ad is, of course, it's a 30-second ad.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the entire arc of the story. And, by the way, it was probably the only good Super Bowl ad there was.
Yeah.
The rest of them, much has been discussed about the Christopher Walken ad that literally nobody knows what was for.
I actually missed a lot of the ads because I was smoking a tri-tip and I was making dinner. So I would, during the commercial breaks, I was actually doing work around the house.
I missed a lot of them because I just didn't care that much. I had sound off at any rate. But this one I did get. So, and the Christopher Walken ad starts out great. It's like the Fat Boy Slim video that features Christopher Walken, you know, weapon of choice or whatever. It attracts you because it's Christopher Walken, and you go, Christopher Walken's dancing, and he's doing all this stuff, and it's cool. Man. You don't know where it's going, though. And this ad is the same thing. It's Christopher Walken walking around, and everybody's talking to him like they're Christopher Walken. But you literally never find out what the ad is for unless you watch it two or three times. And then you're like, oh, it's for a car. Because I don't know why. Anyway.
That seems like a slight oversight, that you would have to watch an ad multiple times to understand really what it's about.
Is that an oversight, or is that marketing?
Maybe. Maybe.
See, the Duncan ad, okay, so Ben Affleck's out there dropping his beats, and of course, she rejects this whole idea, and he has to walk out. But of course, the gist of the whole thing is that Dunkin' Donuts is naming a drink after the Boston Massacre group. So they got at least that.
Which is hilarious. That's great.
Get out of here. Tom, you can stay, says J-Lo to Tom Brady. The best part of this ad, though, Rod, and I can't believe you haven't seen it, because the ad's only 30 seconds long. And it took me a lot longer than that to describe it. You know why?
I'm going to have to watch it on our next
break. Oh, don't even watch it on the break, because you need 4 minutes to watch this entire ad, because they did an entire 4-minute ad that tells this whole story from the beginning. Okay. That is absolutely fantastic. It's amazing. And it's full of his friends saying, don't do this. This is a really bad idea. But he's convincing himself. And there's one scene where he goes into the producer, the record producer, because he wants to record his beats to give to J-Lo, right? And he's got a CD. And he's trying to get the guy to play the CD. And he's like, what is that? I've heard of those, but I don't think I've ever actually seen one. Anyway. As far as the Super Bowl itself went, do you buy the theory that the NFL wanted Kansas City to win and cheated?
How do they cheat? How are they saying they cheated?
Do you know who the number one team for holding penalties was during the 2023 regular season?
Was it Kansas City?
It was Kansas City. By far and away. Wasn't even close.
And they didn't have any?
They have not had a single holding call called on them in 3 Super Bowl wins. Not
okay, one. Now that's a little odd.
Especially since there's video of them holding.
Yeah.
I mean, tackling people, so. It's, I don't know. I don't buy the, what I buy into is the Kyle Shanahan doesn't know how to win a game.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger lead you give him, the less likely he is to be able to pull it off, because he panics. He goes, I don't know, something short circuits in him and he doesn't know how to deal.
Well, they shouldn't have taken the coin toss. They should have given it.
Well, yeah, there's that, but why did you even get to that point?
Well,
see, that's
like your kicker missing the extra point. That's the game right there, right?
It's part of it, yeah. Certainly part of it. Well, I don't know what I bought, but I thought the Dunkin' Donuts ad was good enough that I have my desktop, because I watch it at least a couple of times a day.
Okay.
And I'll link up the 4-minute video in the show notes for today. Because believe me, if you like the ad, if you don't like the ad, nobody cares. But if you do like the ad, you want to see the whole thing, which is 4 minutes long. And because it's great. And at the end of it, you find yourself saying, how about them donuts? I'm sorry, I had to say.
You know who we both are by now, so I'm going to jump into our WTF story.
I'm Rabbi Dave.
I'm Friar Rod. Thanks for that. So basically, Dave, there's a new person in the fashion industry. There's someone, they're breaking
out. The New York Police Dancers. The New York Police Dancers.
No, not them. This just dropped yesterday. Literally just dropped. So, Dave, there's a new sneaker line coming out, and people who've read the news, they probably know what I'm going to talk about, but Donald Trump has now unveiled his shiny high-top sneakers for the cost of $399. They are high tops with a big gold T on the side and an American flag around the ankle part. So they are,
I don't know what you're worried about. Some judge is going to rule that they're overpriced.
Well, besides that, it's probably he's probably doing it to try and help pay off the how many million now? It's 400 some odd million.
$350 million the other day. Of course, none of that's going to stand, but.
No. But, so anyway, I'm curious as to anyone, you know, there's going to be some diehard Trump fans that are going to go ahead and buy it. They're going to fork out $400 plus tax to buy these shoes. Unless you're in Oregon, I guess you could buy them in Oregon, but they're not going to be sold in Oregon. Right. So that's my WTF is just like of all the things that you're going to come out with for Trump, a pair of sneakers is not one I would have picked.
I wouldn't spend $400 on a pair of sneakers.
I don't.
Outside of that, anyway.
Now, so if they were signed, Dave, if they were signed sneakers as a collectible.
You really think those are going to go up in value? I mean, these aren't Franklin Mint plates. There's no guarantee, but, you know, all the other ones have. Anyway. This week, we were told that we had to pass a bill because if we didn't pass the bill, Ukraine would fall and we would have to fight the Russians.
Yes.
And the bill didn't pass. The House of Representatives said, we're not taking this up. And within hours of that decision, we were informed by multiple politicians who were clearly leaking information that the Russians, the very people that we are going to end up fighting if we don't give money to Ukraine, had launched or designed or developed or something, some sort of weapon system that was, quote, terrifying, unquote, and they were preparing to unleash it upon the world.
Dun, dun, dun.
Are you sure you don't want Ukraine fighting for us? Well, people started asking questions. Well, what exactly is this? What are you talking about? And of course, then it leaked the next day that, well, we can't tell you what it is, but it's up in space. I'm not making any of this up. This is all happened.
This is all before we sent Kamala over to Ukraine.
And then we were told that this whole thing was just, this was, you know, this was going to counterbalance everything. This was going to destroy the world. And if we didn't stop Russia right now by giving money to Ukraine, then, well, we're going to wash our hands of this. All you Americans are going to be dead. And we're going to stand there on your graves and say, we told you so. Should have given money to Ukraine. People started asking questions. Well, as more information leaked out, it became apparent that the Russians have an idea for putting something in space. And maybe at some point in the next 100 years, they might. But it's not actually there yet, but it could be there any day now. Which is why we need to give money to Ukraine. And by the end of the week, people were asking questions about it to, who is this guy, the Secretary of Defense? I don't know. He's some big wig at the Pentagon who was giving a briefing.
Mm-hmm.
Asked him the question.
Let me go to the phone here. Jeff Shogle, Task and Purpose.
Thank you. I know this may be a question for Soviet Premier Putin, but the god-awful thing that the Russians want to put into space, is it like GoldenEye, the thing from the 1995 Bond movie? And is it time for all of us on the ground to join Jed and the Wolverines?
Jeff, I'm not sure how to respond to that. I guess we just have to live and let die.
Which is the kind of thing that makes me say,
WTF?
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Dave.
I am Friar Rod.
So I opened the show by telling you that one of the things I hate doing is having to rely on other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, as I said, has been a very busy, difficult... Went to see the surgeon on Thursday about the knee.
Yeah, what's going on, Dave?
Well, here's the thing. I was given some options. Do nothing, which
continue to have pain
means that I continue to have pain and instability, or just take massive amounts of painkillers, which is also counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Or a full knee replacement of the replacement, not a revision, an actual, we're going to take everything out, cut out all the scar tissue, and do a new knee replacement.
TKR, right? Total knee replacement.
Super TKR is what this is, because she starts showing me, now again, I've had pictures of the x-rays from day one, and I can look at them and see, okay, that doesn't look right. But I am not a surgeon, nor am I a radiologist, don't really know what I'm looking at. So she starts explaining to me what I'm looking at, which is an unmitigated disaster.
Mm-hmm.
This thing has completely failed. Not just the top section, which is what I thought we were dealing with. The bottom section has become problematic as well, which is why the pain sometimes varies. So both parts of this have to be removed.
Mm.
Okay? And replaced with heavier, more stable elements, which means that instead of just having the typical knee replacement, the bottom section has a keel on it, extends down maybe an inch or two.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to go 3 to 4 inches with a rod into both my femur and my tibia.
Femur. Yeah. Tibia.
Plus heavier base stuff, which should result, she says, in, quote, less pain, but more stability, but also less mobility. It will be unlikely that I will be able to bend my knee past 90 degrees.
Hmm.
Which, I want you to think about this for just a moment. How often do you bend your knees more than 90 degrees? And you will be surprised at what the answer is if you really stop and think.
It's more often than not.
Right.
Even more squatting
sitting,
for you.
Right. God, no. So, to do this, her schedule is out about 6 to 8 weeks. Now, there is a problem with my A1C. My A1C is just a tad too high. She's not concerned about it, but she would prefer to see it lower.
Okay.
So, we're working on that.
Stop eating bread.
Pretty much have. I haven't had a carb in 2 days, 3 days. Well, since the surgery. Since the consultancy on Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you know that you can hard boil eggs in an air fryer?
I did not know that, no.
Listen, folks, complete aside. Set it to the meat setting at 250 degrees, 16 minutes. And they are perfect. And I mean perfect.
Okay, Dylan, you've got your task. Dylan loves
so,
air frying.
I like hard-boiled eggs, but I hate all the process of boiling one or this, that. And then, for some reason, you can never get the timing of it right, and they don't peel right. I'm telling you, 16 minutes at 250 degrees. Perfect.
See, I can't eat eggs, so.
As soon as I'm done here, I'm going to go make some more. Because eggs I can have.
I envy you.
Yeah, it's a good deal. Anyway, so... She hands me two pieces of paper. I have to go get a pre-op physical from my doctor. It's at this point that I start to become concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see my doctor is the same doctor who once gave me a 6-minute physical.
Oh, gee.
So I'm concerned about, can I even get in to see him? On Thursday, as we were leaving the doctor's office, I called him's office to get the appointment. They were closed because of the inclement weather. It did snow the night before, but everything else was open, so anyway.
It took a snow day.
Apparently. So I still don't have that appointment. But that's going to require an EKG, which is going to cause another problem because I have a branch bundle blockage, which means I'm going to end up going, oh my God, you have a, this is not normal. So I'm going to have to go see a cardiologist. All this snowball effect of stuff. Plus I'm going to have a physical from this guy who gets them done in 6 minutes. If I can get an appointment before the 6 weeks, because her schedule is late March, probably the first week in April.
Okay.
With a 6 to 8 month recovery. So, and my bedroom is upstairs.
That's tragic right there.
Do not have a shower downstairs.
Okay.
That's even more.
That is doubly tragic.
Okay. So that's bad enough, right? That's going to be problematic enough. But I also have to get clearance from my dentist.
Mm-hmm. And you've had all that dental work done.
Which still isn't complete. So I went to my dentist's office, I handed him the form, and I said, I need a signature on this. I didn't say anything else. I said, I need him to sign off on it. And it came back as, well, he's busy right now, can I make a copy of this? Fine. Hour later, I get a call. Well, you need to come see him.
No.
And you've been putting off a root canal that we think needs to be done. And I said to the gal on the phone, you're going to hold up my knee replacement for a root canal. She said, well, that's what the doctor's opinion is. And I said, well, my opinion is I might need to be finding another dentist. We'll see what he says on Friday when I see him, but
yeah,
this is not going to be held up for a root canal.
No.
But it could be held up because I got to go find another damn dentist to sign a piece of paper saying there's no infection. Now, here's the problem with all this.
Mm-hmm.
If he had some reason to believe that there was an infection in my mouth, fine. But they just did blood tests. There are specific blood tests. By the way, I also learned there's a 2-week A1C measurement. Yeah. There are two specific blood tests that they do to determine whether there's infection anywhere in your body. Did you know this?
I know that they have that, yeah.
Do you know what my results were?
Negative.
There are no infections in this guy's body. Which, okay, of course, we already knew because they went rooting through my knee with that needle. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, she wants to do again.
Oh.
Because maybe he missed something.
Okay.
And I said, the only way we're doing this is if I get to have a drink before this happens. And she says, well, I wouldn't recommend that, but I will give you a Valium.
Okay, that works.
So I'm back to having to rely on other people to get ready for this.
Ugh.
And I'm frustrated beyond belief. By the time we get together next week, I'll have a better view of things, but
okay,
including whether or not I need a new dentist. Because at 3 o'clock on Friday, I see my old dentist, who, by the way, has not contacted me in a year. Not a year. A year. They have not called me. I've been down there six times.
So you needed a root canal, but they put it off for a year.
Well, not only that, but I'm sitting here waiting on implants for a year. They have not called. I've been down there six times saying, what are we doing?
I'm just going to default and say you need a new dentist.
I know this. But again, I'm back to relying on other people to do things again, and it's frustrating. So that's where we are. As things stand today, probably the first week in April, I will be down. And since I won't be able to climb stairs, which is where my computer is, and since my laptop has decided to just eat itself, I don't have a clue what the hell's going on with that. Can't get it to start. Can't get it. I won't have a computer downstairs.
Mm.
All I'll have is my phone. So it could be an extended period of time before we – so enjoy these final morsels of what the frock, because
– don't say final morsels. Just say – temporary hiatus.
These morsels before a temporary hiatus. These hard-boiled eggs from an air fryer that will be delicious. I'm serious. 250, 16 minutes.
Perfect. Okay.
You will thank me for letting you know this.
They don't explode or anything?
No. Because the temperature. Lower temperature.
250 for 15 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, boiled water is 212, right?
Yeah.
So, no, they don't. Anyway, that's where I'm at. So, we'll let you know. We'll keep you up to date as best we can. Is that right?
All right.
WTF at whatthefrock.org. Check us out online, whatthefrock.org, or on Facebook. Just look for What the Frock, Diamond Rod. And on that note, I'm Rabbi Dave.
I am Friar Rod.
And this has been...
What the Frock?